Once again, I am joined by Matt Stringer, the Chief Executive of RNIB. It's our weekly catch-up where we look at some of the big stories coming out from the charity. Matt, thanks once again for joining us.
As ever, Alan, nice to speak to you.
One of the big events this week, I was actually talking to someone about this in one of our interviews for RNIB Connect Radio, was Design for Everyone, which is a fantastic campaign, but incredibly far-reaching.
From our perspective, lots of core products that everyone else would take for granted don't necessarily work if you're blind and partially sighted. And I think our campaign is designed to sort of make that point that, you know, blind and partially sighted people should be able to use things and should be able to use things with the appropriate privacy or dignity or confidentiality where that is relevant.
You're looking at, well, I suppose it's accessibility across the board in all areas, but it really started the prototype of an accessible pregnancy test kit. I've spoken to one of the women involved in the campaign and what she had to go through emotionally, having to ask people to tell her what was on her pregnancy test kit. It was unbelievable. She had to go through something which is so incredibly personal and available to everyone who has vision.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, we've all either lucky enough to be parents, we've probably gone through that process ourselves, or we've seen it depicted in films, you know, you sort of waiting for the blue line to appear in the little white window. And clearly that's a visual prompt, which is not available to blind and partially sighted people. Those of us who are sighted, you don't think about it. But, you know, again, what should be a moment of great potential excitement and exhilaration is sort of denied you because the design doesn't work. And so I think, you know, using a pregnancy test as an example of the general problem, I think is incredibly understanding and hard hitting for people. We've got a great video that makes the point, again, on all our social media that people can go and access, that I think shows the reality of that in a video format. It's a very powerful example of the broader problem.
And of course, the everyday work of RNIB goes on despite the pandemic, which of course creates more work as well. But I wanted to look at accessible voting because it is a topic that comes round. It's almost cyclical when we go through elections, but perhaps there's some traction now from Westminster and from the devolved nations as well.
Yeah, there is a similar point. You know, it's an everyday occurrence that we take for granted, a bit like, you know, the pregnancy test, but which is denied blind and partially sighted people because the setup is pretty old-fashioned, a stubby pencil and a long ballot paper. So we've been agitating for a lot about that, as you know, and we've done a lot with the devolved governments in Scotland, actually, where they've been very forward-thinking and been working with MPs across the political spectrum, actually, in getting some pilot set up for the next sort of rounds of voting in Scotland next year. It's also something which the Cabinet Office in the UK have been very bothered about. We have some good traction with Chloe Smith, who's a minister in the Cabinet Office, who's been seeing the work we've done in Scotland as a very useful pilot for broader UK implementation. So, yeah, we have a round table meeting with the Cabinet Office to have the latest sort of thinking about that. And I think, you know, it will only be another meeting which signposts the way to new developments using technology and new approaches to enable blind and partially sighted people to be able to vote in private, which the rest of us, you know, take for granted.
Indeed, more to come on that one. And something close to my heart as well, which kind of cropped up this week, which caught my eye, was another guide dog refusal, you know, in terms of accessibility. It was RNIB's Keith Valentine who had an issue there as well. And again, it's a bit like accessible voting. It's a problem which comes round over and over.
Society never seems to totally learn its lesson that clearly you are absolutely legally entitled to take your guide dog with you into pretty much all settings. We had a lot of work we did probably back end of last year, well, a year ago now, around taking guide dogs in taxis where we had a spate of refusals, and David Clark, one of our team, was on a lot of media appearances pushing, you know, sort of updated sort of regulations and giving it a lot of profile. But, you know, it doesn't go away, and organisations don't necessarily do a good job of training their staff to understand it. So I don't think it's necessarily that organisations set against it. I think, you know, most organisations would absolutely embrace, you know, disability rights. But clearly what is breaking down is the training and making sure their teams on the ground in customer-facing roles know what's what and are able to implement the law appropriately. So yeah, Keith was out with his new guide dog who looks great. Dotty is a guide dog. I know you're out in a pub in Kent and were absolutely allowed in properly by the first person there and very properly treated, very courteously treated. But subsequently other members of staff got involved and didn't understand the rules and then tried to suggest that Keith had sort of deliberately flouted the rules. All in all, a very unedifying experience for Keith and his wife and clearly Dotty the guide dog. So in some respects, not a great example, but a good example for us to again make the point. And actually, Keith's had some exposure on that this week. And I think the more the media pick up on this and the more we can engage with organisations to really make sure they train their teams, so in those customer-facing roles, they just automatically implement the law, then maybe a good thing will come from this.
Let's finish off on a fun theme now, because you do have something in store for blind and partially sighted kids with the holidays coming up.
No, that's right. Well, I'm conscious, you know, different half terms across the UK. Halloween, clearly, which I think, again, in some places, trick or treat is going to be difficult this year. But we've done a great initiative with the sensory scavenger hunt, which is basically a pack of sort of materials for families to use to help them and their kids consider how blind and partially sighted people overcome challenges on a day-to-day basis. And the sensory scavenger hunt, and the key word there is sensory, gives a set of activities and things for kids to do, a number of tests that allows them to try and tell differences using smell, using taste, and using the texture. And there's a number of things you can do indoors or indeed outdoors, get people outside is a good thing, and provide a bit of fun for the family and an understanding of how people use senses to be able to navigate their way around. So if you're looking for a bit of fun over half term, you've got the kids to occupy, please go on our website and look up the sensory scavenger hunt. The other good thing, it's free. You can download the pack for nothing. And clearly, if you would like to make a donation, all well and good. And the detail is there on our website about how to do that. But if nothing else, I think it's a couple of hours worth of fun for the kids guaranteed with the RNIB sensory scavenger hunt.
And if you would like to learn more about RNIB's services, what do we get up to, and indeed all the topics we've been talking about today, do go to rnib.org.uk. The helpline is also there for you on 0303 123 9999. Matt, we'll catch up again next week, but thanks again for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan. Speak to you next week.